again, kings and queens of the ring. Welcome back to another episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I am your hostess, the First Lady of Northern California Professional Wrestling, Miss Poyo Del Mar, and you are tuning in to the Pro Wrestling Podcast with an ever-so-slightly queer twist. I am very excited to be back with this episode of Arm Drag Takedown because later in this episode, I bring you an in-depth interview with Katarina Waters. She's a former Impact Wrestling Knockouts champion as well as a former Knockouts Tag Team champion, a title she held with Angelina Love. And she's an alumni of WWE, where you may recall her as Katie Lee Burchell. I recently had the tremendous opportunity to work backstage with Katarina at a Hood Slam professional wrestling show here in the San Francisco Bay Area. She is phenomenal. During our extended interview, we talk about everything from her professional wrestling career to her relationship status, as well as her love for Dungeons & Dragons, and much, much more. You are not going to want to miss this one. Plus, in addition to that, I will give you the arm drag takedown of my thoughts on the post-Austin Aries as world champion era of Impact Wrestling. They're not calling it a reboot, but in so many ways it is, and I am very excited to give you my thoughts on that. We'll also recap recent events in WWE as well as the arrival of a number of former Impact Wrestling superstars on the brand and much more. In addition to all of that, I will be giving you a preview of some incredible upcoming pro wrestling events right here in Northern California, including Big Time Wrestling's co-promotion with Impact, as well as Hood Slam, Wrestling for Charity, and much, much more. You are tuning in to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, and we will be back right after this. To never miss an episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, or the exclusive interviews with today's top celebrities in the industry, follow Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar on social media. You can find us at ADT with PDM. ADT with PDM on both Twitter and Facebook. Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. And we're back with more of this episode of Arm Drag Takedown. I am your hostess, Poyo Del Mar. And as you might know, if you are a regular listener of the show, we have missed several weeks of broadcast. I have been so busy with real life, I have to apologize. I've been keeping up with professional wrestling, but we have passed so many incredible milestones since last we talked, or since I last talked to you, that I am going to, instead of giving this week's weekly updates and arm drag takedowns of each and every show, I'm going to give some overarching thoughts about what's been going on in the world of professional wrestling. Most notably, the arm drag takedown of what is happening in Impact Wrestling. Impact has really stepped its game up, in my opinion, since the most recent series of television tapings. As you know by now, Austin Aries made a triumphant return to Impact Wrestling and captured the World Heavyweight Championship from none other than Eli Drake. It was the beginning of a new era, and instead of calling it a reboot, the owners at Anthem and the people behind the scenes at Impact have done what I have been begging them to do for the last three reboots. Instead of trash-talking the previous era, instead of telling us how bad the product was, they have simply stepped up their game. And if you follow the social media accounts of Impact Wrestling, instead of saying anything negative about Eli Drake as champion because he was incredible, or any of the previous several months to a year of their product, they are simply saying that they have made a renewed vow to the audiences, to the fans, to the viewers, to give the best possible product going forward. And they are doing it. Each and every episode for the last several weeks of Impact have seemed better than the previous, and each of the most recent episodes have been pretty phenomenal. So the fact that they only seem to be getting better is very, very good news. as I have been lamenting for months, it seems, the Impact Wrestling Tag Team Division finally has a new set of faces contending for the titles. That is the Cult of Lee, Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley. Caleb Conley, who I have loved since his days in the WCWC up in the Pacific Northwest. If you don't watch the WCWC, go check it out on YouTube. I am a huge fan. It has such an old school feel to it, and I love that. Caleb Conley and Trevor Lee are the new top contenders for LAX's belts. Meanwhile, OVE has been moved out of tag team contention for the moment, and they are, led by Sami Callihan, pursuing a feud with none other than Bobby Lashley. Callihan and Lashley had a great match on the most recent episode, and it seems to be furthering a feud between the two men that I think will do Sami Callihan a tremendous amount of good, and it gives Bobby Lashley something outside of the title picture, which is jam-packed at the moment, to keep him busy. Good on Impact Wrestling for finally stepping up to the plate with a new set of contenders, and congratulations to Caleb Conley. Like I said, I'm a big fan, for finally moving into his first time as a title contender in Impact Wrestling. Meanwhile, as the new Impact Wrestling Grand Champion, Matt Sydal has finally changed the rules of the game for that belt, removing the very annoying round system that did not make sense in the world of professional wrestling, where we all know that professional wrestling is predetermined. Nobody wants to watch a point system when we know that the rounds are already predetermined, that the winner is predetermined. Matt Sydal is going to reinvent this as a solid secondary title, I am sure, and it is going to finally fall into the place that it has long been necessary for this company to have a secondary title that is defended under traditional rules. Matt Sydal is also showing a change of character, which is proving very interesting. His namaste, his whole spiritual leader thing, it reminds me a little bit of what's going on with Josephus in the NWA with his spiritual advisor, but it will be revealed at some point, presumably, who Matt Sydal's spiritual advisor is. And meanwhile, Matt has been putting on some phenomenal matches, also mixing in with the X Division wrestlers, giving them some credibility in the secondary title level as well. Things in the X Division look fantastic. We've got some great competitors who are contending for that title, and we will see where both the X Division and Grand Championships go as we move forward. Matt Sydal is proving to be an integral part, I'm assuming, of what Impact Wrestling has upcoming in the future. Meanwhile, with Austin Aries as the new Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, it renews opportunities and stories within the main event picture because, as you may recall, shortly before Eli Drake dropped the title to Austin in his unexpected return, he had recently defeated both Alberto El Patron and Johnny Impact in a three-way match wherein, if El Patron and Impact lost, neither of them got a world title shot going forward. Well, now with a new champion, that is off the table. So we've got Austin Aries as the new world champion. We've got Eli Drake, Johnny Impact, and Alberto El Patron all chasing after the gold. It is a very exciting world title picture in Impact Wrestling. EC3 also appears to be in the title hunt after a recent pinfall over number one contender Johnny Impact, which saw in the same match Tyrus, who was on a few episodes ago here on Arm Drag Takedown, telling us that he was more than enthusiastic about returning to Impact Wrestling if the opportunity presented itself, so long as Jeff Jarrett was gone. Well, Jeff is gone, and if you're following the news, he's also going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year on WrestleMania weekend. But Jeff Jarrett's out of the picture. Tyrus is back in the picture, and things are looking very positive for the upper echelon of Impact Wrestling. It would be remiss of me, as I mentioned early in the show, that I'm going to be touching upon people who have departed Impact Wrestling, to not mention that as of the most recent series of television tapings for Impact Wrestling, EC3's contract with the company is done. In fact, EC3 has popped up at the most recent NXT TakeOver, showing his face in Philadelphia. And I think if you are listening correctly to the Impact Wrestling ring announcers, they have made reference to the fact, they said that EC3 is popping up everywhere. He is being seen all over the place, they said on a recent show. And that's true. They still got him on their taped episodes of Impact, but he is going to be competing very soon, sooner rather than later, one would assume, on NXT. And I'm looking forward to seeing what is in store for EC3 in WWE. Of course, if you recall correctly, EC3 was formerly with WWE. He was a contestant on NXT back in the day when it was an actual competition series. He was known as Derek Bateman there, and he did not fare so well. But since coming to Impact Wrestling a number of years ago, he has become a superstar in his own right. And I really firmly believe that with the development of WWE and the creative minds of Triple H and those who are leading NXT, we will see EC3 become a top-tier contender, the same as we have seen from Bobby Roode, the same as we have seen from Samoa Joe, the same as we have seen from AJ Styles. I believe that EC3 has all of the makings of a world-class superstar once he eventually makes it to the WWE main roster. Also jumping from Impact Wrestling to WWE, and as seen at a recent set of NXT TV tapings, the voice of Impact Wrestling, Jeremy Borash, has left the company. He is now with WWE and is expected to be making his appearance quite soon as part of the NXT announce team. In what capacity, we have yet to see, but he will be joining the squad there, and I wish nothing but the best for Jeremy Borash. That said, Jeremy's departure from Impact Wrestling opened a spot which Sanjay Dutt stepped into. I personally have very much enjoyed the last 2 weeks of Impact Wrestling with Sanjay Dutt on the announce team. Now, I will say this. I find Sanjay Dutt's announcing to be very interesting. He does not seem to be towing the party line quite as much as he does simply commenting based on his own thoughts and what he sees in the ring. And by that, I mean he doesn't seem to be advancing storylines in the same way, necessarily, that Josh Matthews does. It could be something that they are giving him free rein, or perhaps he is just beginning his departure from being an in-ring performer to becoming a voice behind the microphone on a permanent basis. Presumably, he will warm up to the challenge and begin to further storylines through his commentary. At the moment, quite often, he, in my opinion, seems to be no-selling some of the people as being monsters. He's like, whoa, did you see that? I mean, he doesn't seem to be selling the performers in the same way that a Jeremy Borash would or even Josh Matthews does, but I believe over time he will come into his own. I found his recent comments about some Bollywood movies a little weird. I mean, I get it. They're trying to be like, look, India, we have an Indian behind the microphone. Look, we're giving an opportunity to one of your own. Reminder, they are definitely trying to grow their viewing audience in India. Sanjay Dutt could possibly do that. I think that he certainly has a cachet with Indian fans. They love him. Clearly, he picked up his first and only X Division championship in front of a hometown audience, so to speak, in India during an Impact Wrestling tour there. So he is beloved by Indian fans. But whether or not it's going to be enough for Indian fans to tune in because they have Sanjay Dutt on the microphone is yet to be seen. Still, Jeremy Borash is now with NXT. Sanjay Dutt is behind the microphone in Impact. Things are changing for both brands, and we look forward, or I look forward, to seeing where this takes us in the coming weeks. I do want to quickly touch on the fact that one of the best things going on in the main roster of WWE, in my opinion, is the advancement of Elias as a top name in the company. He is rapidly moving into main event contention on Raw, and I think this is fantastic. They are always in need of new top-tier stars, and Elias has found his stride. The audience is clearly behind him. It takes a man of epic talents to be able to turn audiences from chanting "Walk with Elias" to booing him in a matter of seconds. They are chanting "Walk with Elias" in terms of what WWE stands for. They are cheering for him. And then as soon as he trashes them during one of his song promos, they hate him again. This is a real talent, and I look forward to seeing how he develops in the main event. He will be in the Elimination Chamber. I expect a strong showing from him in the Elimination Chamber to establish him as a top star. Good for WWE for making a new star. Great news for Elias for capitalizing on this opportunity. It's funny to me because I was recently reflecting on the number of stars that are currently out with injuries and names like Dean Ambrose who have fallen off the radar while he is recuperating, and reflecting on the idea that I have not missed him one bit. By the time Dean Ambrose returns from his injury, they're going to have to work double time to make sure they are able to reestablish him as a top-tier star, because people like Elias and Braun Strowman and others who have moved up the ladder quite quickly in recent months are definitely making sure that we don't miss any of the names which we previously were force-fed. I think that Dean Ambrose falls into that category, and I think even Roman Reigns is being slightly pushed down by the breadth of new talent that is beginning to emerge in WWE. It's great for the talent, it's great for the audience, and it's great for the company. As Mr. McMahon would say, it's what's best for business. I do want to give a quick arm drag takedown of what's going on in the newly revamped National Wrestling Alliance. That's right, the NWA is back, and it's doing very well for itself with Nick Aldis as the new World's Heavyweight Champion. For those of you who tuned in a few episodes ago when Nick Aldis joined me here on Arm Drag Takedown, he talked about the future for NWA, the exciting things that are going on, and if you are following the NWA's YouTube channel and 10 Pounds of Gold series, which I strongly encourage those fans of professional wrestling to do, unless you're just a fan of WWE or Impact Wrestling, follow the 10 Pounds of Gold series. It's quite compelling and it's easy to keep up with. It's mostly 5-10 minute segments on their YouTube channel. Anyway, I keep up to date on it and it's very compelling right now. Nick Aldis is on his Aldis quest. It's his 20 defenses of the title in like the next 60 days or something of that nature. 20 competitors in 20 defenses. His most recent competitor was shocking. Shocking, you guys. At a recent Championship Wrestling from Hollywood show, Nick Aldis was challenged by recently departed WWE alum James Ellsworth. That's right, James Ellsworth, who was last seen in WWE getting his ass kicked by all of the women on the roster, challenged for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. Of course, on the Aldis Crusade, Nick Aldis has stated that he will only defend against former world's champions or men who have competed for a world heavyweight title. And thusly, as a result, James Ellsworth qualified. It was reminded to fans that Ellsworth pinned AJ Styles, the reigning WWE World Heavyweight Champion, on multiple occasions and even challenged for the WWE World title at one point in time. It was a fun surprise, a great twist, and a fun way to bring a recently departed WWE superstar into the NWA fold. Nick Aldis, of course, came out on top in that match, but it certainly created some buzz in the independent wrestling world. Good on Billy Corgan, great on Dave Lagana. Good job, James Ellsworth. You are continuing to make a name for yourself outside of WWE. And Nick Aldis, you are producing some phenomenal work as the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. I look forward to seeing where things head for the NWA. As you are aware, I brand myself as the First Lady of Northern California Professional Wrestling, and that means that I have to keep my finger on the pulse of all that is going on in the hotbed of professional wrestling that is the San Francisco Bay Area and Northern California. That means that I am aware of almost everything going on in this area in terms of professional wrestling and sports entertainment, and there is so much that is happening in the coming months. Of course, I am part of Wrestling for Charity. It's a local organization that produces wrestling shows for the benefit of charity organizations. And our next show is coming up on Thursday, March 22nd at San Francisco's El Toro Nightclub. We have recently crowned WFC Heavyweight champion El Pistolero Julio Pedroza is going to be back defending his belt against the latest henchman of the Cold One, AC, with whom I'm embroiled in a long-standing feud that goes back almost a year. This time, Julio Pedroza is going to be defending against Lazarus, the giant walking scarecrow. It is going to be off the hook. That is also going to be a card packed with incredible, incredible performances by some of the Bay Area's favorites, including the Reading Rainbow, the Honor Society, and a returning international superstar, Royce Isaacs, is going to be on the show. WFC is also initiating a new talent initiative that is going to be bringing some of the top names from California independent wrestling to the Bay Area, not the least of which will be our upcoming series of shows at El Toro Nightclub right here in San Francisco. Meanwhile, if you are a fan of Impact Wrestling and live in Northern California, you are getting your opportunity to see the stars of Impact Wrestling for two nights. That is going to be Friday, March 23rd, and Saturday, March 24th, when Big Time Wrestling partners with Impact Wrestling for shows in Newark, California, as well as Salinas, California. They're going to have such names as Impact Grand Champion Matt Sydal, Alberto El Patron, the World Tag Team Champions LAX, Moose, Eli Drake, Trevor Lee, Demon Assassin Rosemary and Taya Valkyrie, The Machine Brian Cage, Eddie Edwards, and much, much more. They are going to be presenting two nights of incredible Impact Wrestling action right here in Northern California. I am ecstatic. I've only had the opportunity to see Impact Wrestling live once, just one time, when they came to San Francisco a number of years ago. And this is Northern California's rare opportunity to see the stars of Impact right here at home. Big Time Wrestling is presenting that, and you can find out all the details by following BT Wrestling CA on Twitter, BT Wrestling CA on Twitter, or go to their website, btwrestling.com. That's right, the stars of Impact Wrestling for two nights only in Northern California, Friday, March 23rd in Newark, California, and in Salinas, California on Saturday, March 24th. BTWrestling.com for all the details. And last but certainly never least, one of the biggest highlights of Northern California professional wrestling is Hood Slam Wrestling. And you can go find out more about Hood Slam at birdswillfall.com. What a weird website. What a weird promotion. But what an incredible night of action. Every first Friday at the Oakland Metro Opera House in Oakland, California, Hood Slam brings the craziest action that you will ever see. And later in this episode, Katarina Waters, formerly known as Winter in Impact and Katie Lee Burchill in WWE, and I talk about what a unique and incredible environment Hood Slam is. But I remind you, on Saturday, February 24th, they have their annual Femmed Out show. That is when all of the performers who are male dress in drag. I love it. I recently put AJ Kirsch, formerly of WWE Tough Enough, in drag at a Hood Slam show to promote this. But their full show is going to be on Saturday, February 24th in Oakland, California. You're not going to want to miss that. And in early March, Katarina Waters will return to Oakland to continue what was a phenomenal beginning of a feud with local favorite Shotzi Blackheart for Hood Slam. As I said, go to birdswillfall.com to get all the details about Hood Slam. You guys, Northern California is one of the best places to see regional professional wrestling action. Before I wrap up this shout out to regional action here in Northern California, I want to also make mention that on Saturday, March 17th, that's right, St. Patrick's Day, All Pro Wrestling Kick Rocks is going to be back at the Pacelli Event Center in Daly City, California. This is going to be a really fun show as well. It's going to have APW Universal Champion Jeff Cobb. You have to know him for his time as Dario Cueto's demonic brother, the monster Montanza Cueto in Lucha Underground. It's going to have APW Worldwide Internet Champion Jacob Fatu. He is the son of the Tonga Kid. The APW Tag Team Champions Marcus Lewis and Will Hobbs. And it's going to include Reno Scum, Ring of Honor star Flip Gordon, and in a very apropos guest role on the show, the Lucky Leprechaun himself, formerly known as Hornswoggle in WWE. Swoggle is going to be joining this St. Patrick's Day show. For all the details, go look up All Pro Wrestling on the internet to get your ticket information. You are listening to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, the First Lady of Northern California Professional Wrestling. Remember, follow this podcast on Facebook and Twitter at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. You certainly never want to miss any of our exciting celebrity interviews, updates on what's happening new and exciting in professional wrestling, and much, much more. ADT with PDM on social media. I'm Poyo Del Mar, and we'll be back right after this with former Impact Wrestling Knockouts champion and former WWE superstar. She was respectively known in those companies as Winter or Katie Lee Burchill. She now wrestles under her real name, Katarina Waters. She will be on for our exclusive and extensive interview right after this. I'm so glad that we connected and had the opportunity to speak, and that you were excited actually to be on the podcast. So I'm very excited. I'm excited to have you.
Of course, I'm excited. How could I not be?
This particular podcast, it mostly just revolves around my lifelong love for professional wrestling, but it always makes it a little extra special when a guest says what you said on Twitter, like, I pretty much love all things drag too, because we have two things that we both love in common.
Yes, for sure. But I've always had, like, a fascination with it ever since Frankenfurter, I guess.
Frankenfurter, and that is a great representation of drag.
Yeah, it was, like, kind of my first idea that something like that could exist.
You're very interesting in that way, because you have these unique things that sort of introduce you to bigger picture ideas. Like Frankenfurter introduced you to the idea of drag, and then I read that Jerry Springer basically introduced you to the idea of wrestling.
Well, it wasn't so much that Jerry Springer introduced me to the idea of wrestling. I was already a wrestling fan, and I'd seen for the first time a British show, because before that I didn't know there was British wrestling. I was already a fan of WWE, or F as it was at the time, but I had no concept of that you could actually do that in real life. Like, I didn't know there was an indie scene or anything like that.
Oh, I got it.
I didn't have any idea that there was anything outside of WWF or WCW. I figured they would just hire you and then train you up, like how it is sometimes today. But anyways, and then I just, like, coincidence, I saw a British show, and I was like, hang on, wait, what is this? And then I really wanted to do it, but then I didn't know, like, how to start. But when I saw, so it was Alex Shane from FWA at the time. Actually, I'm not sure FWA existed right then when I saw it. It was him and Stu the Dominator who were on EWW, and came out, and they had these gimmicks, because the show that I'd seen was quite sort of plain and old school.
Right.
You know, it was so great, but I really wanted those American character gimmicky things, you know, that I saw on TV. So that was when I realized that that kind of thing existed in Britain and that there had to be a way in for me. And that's kind of what inspired me to then, you know, find a wrestling school.
Of course, I love solid in-ring action, too. And I think that you can't really get too into professional wrestling if the in-ring product isn't at least kind of up to par. But
Right.
I also, like you, have always been really drawn to the over-the-top character elements, the storytelling that comes along with those character elements, and those are the parts that really, I think, have inspired my passion throughout my life of watching professional wrestling.
Yeah, that's how it was for me, for sure, because actually the very first time that I saw anything about professional wrestling was the thing about Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. And it was like an article in a magazine, and they wrote about the Ultimate Warrior as if he was real. And they were writing, like, nobody knows who he is, where he comes from, he's a spiritual warrior, whatever, and obviously the way he looked and everything. So this is incredible. Like, I've never seen anything like this before. How is this real? How does it exist? And so that was kind of what initially, you know, sparked my fascination with it. And then when I started watching it, and there were all these other characters. And I come kind of from a theatrical background. So my parents both worked at the theater when I was very small. And so growing up, we went to see a lot of theater, and I loved plays, and I wrote, and, you know, I did film and drama at university. So it was always more, for me, I came kind of from the theatrical side. And then the athletic side grew on me as time went by.
I remember when I was very young, there is a wrestler, well, presumably he may still be alive, but he was very well established in the South, in the U.S., where I grew up, and he was the Missing Link, and that was what his name was, and the Missing Link had, like, green face paint, and he was sort of this, I don't know, sort of pseudo-Neanderthal type of individual, and I just remember being fascinated. I was like, where is Parts Unknown? You know.
Right, exactly.
So
that's the questions you ask yourself.
Right. I mean, I think when, especially when you're very young and wrestling is presented as fact, like what you're seeing is fact to you because you don't know differently, it does inspire a sense of awe. So I love the idea that you were in awe of the Ultimate Warrior. And I remember one of my favorite matches ever growing up was the Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan for the WWE or WWF at that time world title. So, you know, that was something I was certainly very into.
Right. Yeah, for sure. That was kind of before I had an opportunity to really watch it because we didn't have cable. It wasn't the kind of thing that I would have been allowed to watch when I was a kid. So I got into actually watching it on television much later, but every now and then I saw, you know, like a toy or something. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And by the way, I was also the only person I know who was not disappointed to find out that it wasn't real. For me, it was the opposite. So when I found out that it was choreographed or that it was just a show, I thought that was, for me, it made it even better than it was before.
Why is that? Why did it make it better?
Well, because number one, because I kind of grew up very much not sort of wanting people to fight each other, and I would watch it and I would feel guilty because I felt they were hurting each other, and I felt guilty watching it. And then once I found out it was real, I could just enjoy it. Because it was, for me, it was still more about the characters and the stories and the theatrics. So I could watch it, all of that, and enjoy it and just not be worried about, you know, somebody getting hurt.
I suppose also, if you, when you love the kind of theatricality of it and the characters, the fact that basically the something I continue to love to this day, and for example, you were just at Hood Slam, right? And this is the perfect example of that. At Hood Slam, anything, legitimately anything is almost possible at Hood Slam because everything is so crazy and so bizarre and over the top that when you recognize that, well, you aren't actually playing necessarily a personality or persona that is directly related to who you are, you can become anything. And when you step into the world of professional wrestling, that becomes reality.
Right. And ironically, at Hood Slam, they chant, "This is real." And I love that because that's kind of like they understand, you know, the people that go see it, you know, the crowd really understands kind of the irony and the theatrics and the over-the-topness.
Yes, absolutely. You it's according to AJ Kirsch, who was on a podcast, who you actually saw me putting AJ into drag in the back.
Yes.
You know,
it was amazing.
He talks about how the fact that the fans are in on the joke, you know, there's the fact that no matter how extremely strange what they are presenting in the ring as a product might be, the fans do chant, "This is real." And, you know, it's a sign that they're in for the ride. You know, they've come for that and they're on the ride with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, any other show would be the same way. You know, if you watch a play or a movie or any kind of show, you know, if you know beforehand it's not real, you go along with it because that's what you decide to do and you enjoy it for that. And I think, you know, with wrestling, it's just always fought this stigma because it pretended for so long to be real. You know, so you still have people going, "Well, but you know, it's fake." But you don't go and watch a movie and then go, "Well, I would have enjoyed it if it was real."
Right.
You know it's a movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it for what it is.
Right. I remember when the decision was made by then the WWF to sort of pull the curtain back on the Wizard, if you will, and and say, okay, so this is sports entertainment. It's certainly athletic, but it's entertainment, and what you're seeing is not, generally speaking, real in the sense that you're trying to define it, but it's real if you believe it's real. It's like so many things.
Right.
It's real if you believe it's real.
Yeah. To me, it doesn't take away the fascination or, like, there's still enough magic and mystery around it.
I agree. And I look at companies, for example, like Lucha Underground, which takes it presumably even farther because they set wrestling in the world that is entirely their own with storylines that extend beyond wrestling. Like, they have the police investigating disappearances and murders in the company. And and the mysticism that's involved and all of this stuff, I think I find it to be fascinating. In a way that a company that tried to be more realistic based, I probably would not appreciate.
Right.
So your character sometimes delves into mysticism and the dark arts as part of your persona as well. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I guess it kind of just came about with a Winter character in TNA that was Vince Russo's brainchild. And he said to me, "I have this idea for a character, and she's kind of almost a vampire. Like, it's implied that she's a vampire, but it's not. You know, she doesn't have the teeth, and, you know, she's not biting anybody, and, you know, she can be around in daylight or whatever. But then she's got this obsession with Angelina Love, and the idea was that she was convinced that they had met before in a former life or something like that. Or maybe Winter was 100 years old, I'm not sure. You know, it was kind of this magical sort of spiritual connection over hundreds of years of time, or, you know, reconnecting with their spirits kind of thing. So that's kind of more, I guess, where the darkness came from. And I sort of, when I left TNA, I kept that in my performance, I think, because I enjoy playing that kind of character.
I noticed that you enjoy a lot of things. You seem to enjoy cosplay and things of this nature that extend into the theatricality elements of wrestling as much as you do wrestling itself.
Right, absolutely, yes.
I noticed that your Twitter feed specifically involves a lot of things that sort of relate to that in some capacity as well as the wrestling.
Well, partly, it's just from being, you know, from, the, like I said, like a theatrical background. And so I studied film and drama, and the plan was to be an actress, not to be a wrestler. And I'd gone to London to do that, and I discovered that I could train wrestling. I thought, this will be a great hobby, you know. So I started wrestling because I loved it, but I was booked doing acting, and then the wrestling kind of just took over. But I also write, and I've created a couple of, you know, short films. I've made a web series. And so, to me, like, characters and stories are sort of what I guess is most important to me, you know. But then also, I just, I enjoy, you know, when I watch movies, I enjoy really strong characters. Like, for example, you're saying about the cosplaying thing. I haven't really cosplayed, but I am thinking about doing something like that. I have this idea that I would really like to dress up as Skeletor. I think that would be really awesome.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I've dressed as Lobo before for Halloween. So that kind of thing. And then I played Dungeons & Dragons. That was, again, another kind of thing that I just sort of slid into, but we're actually live streaming now, so people can watch me play Dungeons & Dragons every Sunday night at 5:30 on Twitch, and I can plug it real quickly. It'll be twitch.tv/triangletable. So I was interested in the idea and how it worked, and so I sort of put out that I was interested in playing it a couple of times, because I had no idea that it's, you know, a whole long thing. And then a friend of mine said, oh, we're putting together a campaign. Do you want to be a part of it? And I said, sure, that sounds great. So then we start meeting up, and now it's like, you know, we've been playing together sort of on and off for about a year, but now we're really doing it, you know, weekly, and we're doing the live streaming, and it's really awesome, and I'm really getting into it. I get to play a half-elf, and it's really cool.
That is, so that is what I'd seen you mention elements of your Dungeons & Dragons playing, and I mistook it as cosplaying, so now I have a far better understanding. You, I think, would love this. There's a producer of events from Seattle who's coming to San Francisco in March, and he has contacted me to play. They have a staged production, if you will, called Dungeons and Drag Queens. And it's drag queens.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's drag queens playing Dungeons and Dragons on stage with an audience of people watching. And I never thought, I was like, I said to him, people come and watch this? That doesn't sound like...
Oh my God.
But we just sat down and went through all of the characters that I'm going to play at this upcoming event, and my character is based on, she's built to be like a professional wrestler. So.
That's awesome.
That's very, very interesting. So.
Yes, I would watch that for sure. That sounds amazing.
I'm contemplating some other interesting, fun stuff that I want to do in terms of sort of in that world. So you and I may have to touch bases offline just so I can bounce some ideas off of you. Now,
yeah, it'd be awesome.
You mentioned your time with TNA and Impact Wrestling and the character of Winter. There you had the opportunity to work with some really phenomenal females who were doing things well before the WWE was necessarily ready to allow women to take the kind of focus that they have. And so I was wondering if you could tell me about your history of work with Angelina Love and some of the other standout women of that era of Impact.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Angelina Love was, of course, that at the time I never wrestled her because we were on the team. So I never actually got to wrestle her until, like, a few months later on an independent show. And I was like, holy crap, she's good. I mean, I knew she was good, but, you know, sometimes, you know, watching somebody work and working with somebody, you know, is still, you know, her work even was more elevated in my experience working with her than I even, you know, expected. Like, she is amazing to work with. She was really awesome. And then I got to have an awesome fuse with Mickey, who I love as a person and as a wrestler. Gail Kim, wait. I think Gail Kim, I only wrestled once in WWE. I didn't get to wrestle her in TNA, but I wrestled Velvet a few times, and that was really awesome, too. I really enjoyed that little storyline with me versus, because I really loved the Beautiful People gimmick.
Right.
So, of course, you know, I felt a bit bad breaking it up, but it was great to, you know, get to work with them.
That was such an, you know, we talk about, and we being wrestling fans, talk about the women's evolution that has taken really front and center in WWE now. But I I very much credit Impact Wrestling for planting the seeds that women have the ability to be main event level competitors, and that if developed properly and given very good storylines and ample time in the ring to showcase their actual skills versus just their, you know, their kind of beauty or the other things that women have traditionally been, you know, the roles that women have been given in professional wrestling, that fans 100% will get behind that, and they will be as hungry for those matches between women as they are any of the male superstars.
Yeah, agreed. Well, for me, I think it really rests on storylines, because if you have a good storyline, then people will want to see the resulting match. You know, if you just throw matches together for no reason, then it will be good, but it might not have the same traction. And I feel that WWE, even throughout the years, even when I was there, even before I was there too, I mean, it would go in waves. It was like really strange. Like one minute they did an amazing, intense storyline, you know, between women, and with some amazing, you know, one-on-one matches. And then all of a sudden it was like dropped, and then in 2 weeks it would be six girl diva matches, tag matches. You know, where we would have, like, a minute in the ring each, perhaps, maybe. But, like, I mean, even before, like, if you think about Melina and Michelle McCool, I don't know which one it was a pay-per-view match, where they even told them they went a little bit too far because it was a little bit too good. Or anything, you know, back in the day with Trish and Lita, and later on, too, I thought the storyline between Mickie James and Leigh Cool was awesome. And just every now and then they would have storylines that were really great and really intense and made people really sit up and watch. And then they would just almost forget like it happened.
Yes.
They would just be like, oh, this happened, be eye candy again for a minute. It was just really weird. So I feel like they had it there before, but it wasn't consistently. Whereas now, hopefully, it'll just be normal that the women are on the same level as the men.
Yes, I agree with that. And, you know, and I would never discount, you know, I think of the great storylines of the past where Mickie James, for example, had the implied lesbian crush, if you will, on Trish Stratus.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, that was an iconic storyline, too.
Absolutely. And the Lita and Trish matches were built around storylines, great storylines, and great in-ring action, but it was a little confounding to, I think, both the viewers and I'm sure the women involved, that for 3 months or 6 months they have this great placement in the practically in the main event on the show, and then a couple of months later they're in bra and panty matches again, or you know, pillow fights. It's like, well, what is going on here?
Yeah. And to be fair, TNA even tried to do that for a minute, too.
Yes, they did.
Right, towards the end of my stay there, all of a sudden it was like, oh, yeah, let's do a bikini car wash. I was like, what? That's not what we do here.
Yeah, no. And it, you know, when you have the opportunity to see on television the type of matches that specifically right now, I'm always a little dumbfounded, honestly, when WWE does something in terms of in-ring quality and product quality that's actually better than Impact. I'm a big fan of Impact or anything. They're actually beating out things that are happening on the independent circuit in terms of the kind of quality of matches the women are putting on and the amount of time that they're given. I mean, the matches for women are now given a full 10 minutes or more, and that has never happened that I recall. So, you know, it's a brilliant time to see the women in action.
For sure.
So you mentioned early in this interview that your family would not have allowed you to watch professional wrestling when you were growing up on television.
Yes.
I'm curious why that is. What was your home environment like that they would not have allowed that?
Mainly, my mom just didn't think it would be good for a child to be exposed to anything like with violence, you know. So she was a little bit more selective with what TV shows she would let us watch and things like that.
I see. And so, once you decided to enter the world of professional wrestling, what was their response then?
was already a fan of it by this time, incidentally. He was watching it. He started watching it independently of me. Sort of just, I think even coincidentally, because we were living in different households. My parents separated when I was little. So he was all about it, and my mom was just not a fan. she's not a fan of wrestling at all. But she came in when I wrestled one time in Germany. She came and sat through a show. So that was true love.
That is true love. I mean... what are her thoughts, if she's not a fan of the industry at all, what are her thoughts on her daughter being a successful professional wrestler then?
I'm not sure, but really, she sees it that way.
You don't think she sees you as being successful?
I just don't think that in her mind that she thinks of it as anything particularly great. You know, she just accepts
that I
do it.
I would think that, so my daughter's been on international global television. My daughter has won major championships and been a focal point in a company's division centered around women. That would seem like success to me. I mean, I consider it success.
Yeah, I think maybe for her, it's just, she's not grown up where this is a real thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not sort of in people's... It's not a big thing in the culture that she grew up in, or even, you know, in Germany. Like, it's not very visible, should we say. It's kind of more like an underground kind of thing.
Okay,
maybe.
But it's interesting to me to hear that, because you said that she was involved in theater, and, you know, many people, I think... There was certainly a time when many people would be like, well, nobody respectable goes into the theater type of thing, and you know. And probably I would think that this similar...
Yeah, I think that's kind of maybe how she feels about wrestling. I probably shouldn't be talking about it.
So...
But yeah, it's not something that she's particularly excited about, I think.
I wonder if people... Parents might be more excited if their son did it. You know what I mean? Like, it seems more... They'd be like, oh, well, if you're a boy, then that's fine.
Yeah, that's not it for her. My mom was very, very much raised me, like, gender neutral, in a sense. She didn't treat me as any different as she would have, you know, a boy.
Okay.
Like, in terms of, you know, in terms of how I grew up, like, I could choose if I wanted to play with dolls, or I could choose if I wanted to play with bricks and trains, and incidentally, I like playing with both, you know, mainly more bricks and trains, but, but like, that was never a thing, like, it was never, like, a gender thing.
Now, I'm curious, you have been involved in professional wrestling for many, many years, and one of the things that's most common in wrestling is that wrestlers tend to date other wrestlers. Have you have you entered into personal relationships with other wrestlers?
Here and there, sure. Not like on a larger scale. Other than I dated Alex Shane in England.
That's funny, because you saw him on television and then you sought him out, and next thing you know, you're in a relationship with him.
Well, it was like maybe 2 or 3 years later. But
I was curious, because to your credit, even if there have been dalliances into romance in the industry, unlike many other people, your personal affairs have never become part of the tapestry of your actual career. Quite often we see women who are so closely associated or tied to male competitors that it becomes part of their storylines. I think of even in your career in WWE, that became part of one of your storylines with Mickie James. You suggested that her personal relationship with John Cena helped her.
You know what? You know what the crazy thing is? I didn't know that there was a personal relationship there. They did not, like, I had no idea. And I feel bad in hindsight, because I don't know how it felt to her at the time. But I had zero idea. That was just a line that I was given, so I said it. Because I thought that was just a storyline. I didn't know that there was anything behind it. as far as I knew, it was a storyline, you know, they were hanging out, and then I was a bitch, so that's what I said to her, that was my character.
Either way, I mean, it happens all the time still to this day. I mean,
yes.
You know, we see it consistently early in their very early in their WWE careers. You were embroiled in this storyline feud with the Bella Twins, and they are both now so closely associated with WWE superstars that they're...
Yeah.
And I would venture to guess that there's probably some truth to their relationships actually helping move them upward in the company.
Could be.
I think that isn't to discredit either one of them talent-wise, but certainly wrestling is an industry where you can be as talented as you want to be, but it ultimately comes down to a lot of who you know and you know, how that impacts things.
Yeah, I mean, it can, for sure. You know, if you're friends with somebody, even if it's just a friendship, you know, that person is more likely to think of things for you to do than perhaps somebody else. But that doesn't mean that, you know, if you work hard that you can't, you know, get to it by yourself. Also, I wanted to say about Nikki and Brie, and then also because Michelle McCool and The Undertaker. You know, on the one hand, yes, like, you could say that it helps them. But on the other hand, I also feel that it probably would motivate them to work harder, to get out of that stigma, or to make sure that they do the work themselves, or they come up with fresh ideas and good ideas and make themselves relevant. So, you know, pretty much because of the stigma that's kind of placed on them through the relationship. So I think it can be a bit of a double-sided sword as well.
Well, I think that it really depends on the individual, because there are some individuals in life who are only too happy to have nepotism benefit them.
And that's true. But I can say in the case of Nikki and Brie, because I worked with them a lot before, obviously, they got into those relationships, and that they were always very hardworking, and they were always trying to learn more and better themselves. And then I think, too, specifically with Michelle McCool, that I mentioned her, I feel like she was one of the hardest working, for sure. You know, and in part maybe because of the relationship to prove herself twice as much.
Right.
You know, as she would have had to.
Well, Michelle McCool came back at the Royal Rumble and looked like $1 million and performed at a level that I don't even remember her performing at when she was at the height of her career. She was amazing. And so major props to her. I felt like she was one of the standouts in the Women's Royal Rumble match. And if WWE decided to bring her back full time, I would be 100% in support of that. She looked phenomenal. Her in-ring performance, phenomenal. So major props to her. But the flip side of what I was saying is that there are those people who would love to get that nepotism push, and then they just rest on that. And there are other people who are just driven internally. And I think that the best people are those who find that they're always in competition with themselves. Like, I personally have this internal drive to be better the next time than I am this time.
Yeah.
And when you find yourself presumably in a high profile relationship where, I mean, women traditionally are probably, women traditionally are given a harder path than the men in wrestling anyway, I think, because there's ample situations where men are not in the best peak physical condition and they are still adored and embraced and loved and respected. And I think of people like Kevin Owens being a prime example of that. Not the best physical specimen, but one of the best in-ring workers. And women don't get that pass. You know what I mean? Like, they don't. And that's a societal thing. And it's just amplified when you are in an athletic environment like professional wrestling. But the women that you've mentioned, I really do believe, are busting their asses to both stay in shape and to compete at the top level. Certainly, Mickie James is a future Hall of Famer, so her talents are not to be frowned upon in the least, So,
right.
Yeah, so going back to your relationships, this is something that we've discussed offline and said that it's interesting and okay to discuss. You label yourself as polyamorous. And
yes.
That is something, it's a terminology that I think that anybody who does not identify as poly probably doesn't have a firm understanding of. And the definitions of what is poly and what poly relationships look like vary even among those who are. So for the listeners out there, explain what that means to you.
Okay, so for me personally, I'm a little bit more on the, I don't know if it's the outskirts, but I would say I'm definitely solo poly, meaning that generally it's my default setting is to be single. Because a lot of poly people will be in a primary relationship or, you know, or several different, you know, relationships that are very firm. For me specifically, I don't want to be really particularly committed.
Okay.
To a person. And I want to define myself as single, but I do want to be in meaningful, ongoing relationships, potentially. But I'm not necessarily looking for it, but I want to have the freedom that if I meet somebody and I fall in love or I have intense feelings for somebody, that I can embrace it and I can explore it without, say, if I'm already in a relationship with somebody, to then have to say, oh, I can't love you because I already love somebody else.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It definitely makes sense to me. I know people who are in polyamorous relationships that more probably fall under the first description you gave, where they have a primary partner, but it's more like an open relationship situation wherein they are primary, but they both date outside of that and are open to other, I guess, I don't know if they would be equally primary or secondary relationships, but your description indicates that, to me at least, that you are just not looking for a committed monogamous relationship. You're looking for...
I would say I mainly fall under, like, post-relationship anarchy.
Post-relationship anarchy? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. That term does not mean anything to me, but it's exciting. So tell me what that is.
There's a whole manifesto about relationship anarchy. And I can't remember right now the person who wrote it, but it's basically saying that relationships don't need to be as defined or rigid, shall we say. You know, for example, like each relationship that you have with a person, and relationship anarchy actually also encompasses not just romantic relationships, but like friend relationships as well. So, for example, if you have a really close friend, that your relationship with them would be, you know, whatever that is. And then if you have a romantic relationship with somebody, that not one of them is more important than the other necessarily. They're just different. And also that you wouldn't, say, if you're in a regular monogamous relationship, you wouldn't necessarily, maybe if you have a friend of the opposite sex, you know, maybe you're limited as to what time you can spend with them, or say you want to sleep over at the house one night, is that appropriate, is that not appropriate, you know, things like that. But in relationship anarchy, or I guess polyamory too, where you can just embrace whatever the situation is that comes at you. For me, it's really just about, because it just one day occurred to me that this idea that you can only love one person is not true. So, and I think that we are so conditioned to think monogamously because monogamy was invented as a breeding structure, is what I believe. And monogamy was invented for practical reasons and had nothing to do with love initially, because it was about, okay, so we don't have DNA tests and protection isn't that great. Who's making the babies, who's responsible for the babies, and it's about inheriting property and also, you know, the whatever offspring. I'm talking about hundreds of years ago.
Right.
You know, being taken care of. Whereas now we don't have those things anymore. So and the actual act of sex is really not value-free, but it means whatever it means in that moment in time. It doesn't have to be, you know, if you're, we have this idea that if you're in a monogamous relationship, it's good, And if you're not in a monogamous relationship, it's somehow sinful or deviant or it's just physical. But it, to me, the two things aren't mutually exclusive. Like, you can have a very intense emotional connection with somebody, and you can have a really intense emotional connection with somebody else simultaneously, and you don't have to be conflicted or torn between the two because they're both just as real and just as important.
Yeah, I 100%. I tend to be more in line with monogamy. I think that that's just maybe how I... It also keeps me very single, by the way, because maintaining a monogamous relationship is so difficult. But I also am not foolish enough to overlook the concept that monogamy is a social structure generations and generations old, built around the idea that, first of all, life expectancy, like if you made it to 35, good for you. And and secondly, the idea of romantic love people have idealized now didn't quite exist the same way. People were in arranged marriages, you know. The person who could offer your parents the most dowry, or, you know, like the person who had the greatest dowry for their daughter got the better husband.
Right.
So it wasn't a situation of free choice or free will even. It was arranged and planned by other people outside of the two people generally that were marrying. Now the idea that when people think, well, I'm going to, you know, marry somebody and we're going to be married for the rest of our life. Well, that happens sometimes and that's amazing and wonderful. But we find that more often it sets people up for disappointment and failure.
Yeah. And I feel too that a lot of people think they want that because they've been told that they should want that.
Right.
And I think, you know, when I first started, you know, being polyamorous, and I've had monogamous relationships since I first started practicing it for various reasons. But at first I thought, well, monogamy is just plain wrong. And now I have come to realize that monogamy can be beautiful if you have two people that really want that, and they really want to be in a monogamous relationship, and they want to be in a partnership and go through life together, you know, for however long that is. And it can be a wonderful thing, but for me personally, I just don't really feel comfortable with that. And I think that more people would benefit from knowing that there's other choices, and that it's okay to want, you know, to structure your relationships differently. Because we still have a lot of judgment there if somebody doesn't want to commit. And especially the stereotype that men don't want to commit and women have to somehow snatch them up and nail them down or whatever.
Right.
And I just think that if you want to be nailed down, then that's beautiful. But if you don't, it should be okay for somebody to say, you know what, I'd rather not be with just one person. And I think a lot of people are in relationships that they don't really want to be in just because they've been told, well, you know, if you're a good moral person, then if you're in a relationship, you work at it. And you try and make it work no matter what. Which, again, I don't agree with. I think you should just let it go and find something else to do.
Interestingly enough, as a gay male, I have always said that, you know, there's the concept and idea that gay men are very promiscuous, and there's a whole bunch of that. And, you know, I think that all people are pretty promiscuous if allowed the opportunity. But, you know, I definitely believe that a big influencing factor in that is that, unlike heterosexual individuals, gay people have been told our whole life that our relationships are not valid and that there was no ability, legally or otherwise, to have a long-term committed relationship with each other. So on one hand, it erodes people's personal beliefs that that is something that's even possible for them. But it also worked to open the eyes of many people to say that, well, no matter what's happening here between me and another man or another individual, it's never going to be recognized in the same way that other people would. So perhaps that's not what's intended for me anyway. And I think that through that, it allows people to kind of open their mindset up and explore other options. So I think that there's more instances probably of what you're describing happening in the LGBTQ community because our relationships have not been validated by society.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Oh, sounds sad.
Well, I mean, I think that it certainly can be sad. I think that...
Yeah. I just mean as a starting point. You know, the idea that it wouldn't be validated, that part.
Right. Well, the thing I have experienced, I can relate this directly in some ways to my love for professional wrestling, to bring it back to our original topic, is that when society tells you or gives you messages, for example, that what you are doing and who you are as a person isn't acceptable, then you start to believe those and you internalize those ideas, and those later impact your decision-making and or level of participation in those events and activities that you think will not accept you. And that was my experience with professional wrestling for many years, for example, because I thought that the world of professional wrestling would not accept somebody like me.
Right.
And as a result, it was very akin to the idea that you had, that when you said that you felt like you didn't know that wrestling was available where you were, for example.
Right.
And so because of that, you didn't pursue it. Well, I thought that wrestling wasn't available to me. I knew it was available, but I didn't think it was available to me. So I didn't pursue it until much later.
Yeah.
And then once I had some experiences in professional wrestling here in Northern California has been very embracing of me. And that is even as this outrageous drag personality and character that I play. And that was shocking to me. You know what I mean? I was shocked when I walked into a dressing room in a professional wrestling show in high drag and they were like, you know, welcome, hi, you know, and everybody was introducing themselves to me.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when I realized that as we said so early on, in a world of professional wrestling where whatever character you're presenting is just the reality, my presentation of a female-oriented character, despite the fact that I'm male, wasn't much different than the guy next to me who is a lobster. You know, the guy across from me who is like some demonic clown. You know, it's like, well, who's the most ridiculous in this room? And I'm not sure it's always me.
Very true.
So that's why I think that once I embraced the idea that we're all out there playing something that is not necessarily 100% who we are for the entertainment and love of an audience, like that was a very much, at least for me, it was like an even playing field because my character can entertain just as much as somebody else's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
So I would
like to see your character perform.
Yeah, I would love for you to see my character perform. And I get to play, you know, it's interesting because somebody said very early on when I started getting involved, they're like, well, should we acknowledge the fact that you are in drag? And I said, no, she's just a female character. She's just female.
Right.
You know, like, when I walk out there, I'm just a woman. I'm just like every other fabulous diva who comes in here and performs. So.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your acting career because you mentioned that you've been involved in a number of independent films and a web series. Mm-hmm. So tell me more about your acting.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so since I sort of came from that, I've done plays, and I'm in a movie that's on Amazon, which is called Karate Kill.
Love it.
So people can watch that. And then I did a film in England just over a year ago called Red Hun 1, which is a soldier's zombie movie, as it were. I play a soldier, and we fight some zombies. And it's actually going to be pretty epic. I think it's finished now, and hopefully released soon. So I'll keep you posted on that. The web series that I made is called Red Light Diaries, but I'm not in it. I just kind of made it myself.
You made it, but you didn't...
I wrote it, directed.
But you decided not to star in it.
Yeah, because I don't like to really, I'm too critical of myself. So,
wow. Okay.
I didn't want to have to edit myself. And also, I was very low micro, you know, half the time I was actually behind the camera myself, too. So it would have just been too complicated to be in front of the camera as well.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's, I mean, I guess I understand that, but most people, when they are multifaceted, they want to write something that showcases that element of their career and abilities as well.
Yeah, I guess it depends what's more important to you at that moment in time. You know, for me, it's when I'm creating something like that, I don't even want to be in front of the camera.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Because to me, I don't know, I feel like almost directing is almost more exhilarating.
Huh, okay. I think that...
It's like a different type of, you know, I just, when you have like a vision in your mind and then you see it come to life in front of you, to me that's even more thrilling.
Right. I think it's also a little more difficult, too, because the translation of something from mind and, you know, mental to actualization, there's obstacles and challenges, and that's why movie sets have 50 takes, and it's like, no, do it this way.
Right. Yeah, because you want to translate it, but, you know, if you have people that really embody the characters, then it's a beautiful gift.
So I wanted to ask you, and I don't mean this in a lewd way, but it's mentioned in your Wikipedia that you appeared completely nude on stage in a theatrical production.
Everybody asks me about that.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do ask you. Like, I can't fathom, I guess it's probably because of the fact that I'm so accustomed to being under 100 bazillion layers of clothing to kind of actualize this character that I play. I can't imagine being naked in front of an audience of strangers.
It's not hard.
Well, okay.
I don't know. It was the nudist comedy show, right, that you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was basically a friend of mine is a nudist, and he was putting on a comedy show, and basically the concept was, because these are nudist people that just like to do things naked, because they feel it's more natural to be naked and they enjoy that, you know, being clothes-free. And so sometimes they put on different events, you know, where they can enjoy that in a safe environment. And so he put in this nudist comedy event where the entire audience was naked, because, you know, it was for nudists specifically. And then because of that, all the comedians were naked as well. So it was like a clothes-free, naturist event. And then he asked me to host it. And I said, sure. Sounds like fun.
Sounds like an adventure.
But like But I mean, when you're in an environment like that, you know, because it's not a sex thing.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's not about sex at all. It's nobody's like eyeing you up. Well, I mean, I don't know if anybody was eyeing me up or not, but, you know, that's not what it's for. It's specifically because people want to get back to that, you know, the naturalistic way of, you know, being. So it didn't feel in any way, you know, weird or uncomfortable. It's just everybody's doing it, so you forget very quickly.
I think that it would be easier to be in front of a naked audience naked than in front of a clothed audience naked, because then you feel vulnerable and conspicuous.
Yeah. Well, it depends what it is. What you're performing. I mean, if it was a play and I was naked, it wouldn't bother me.
I think I would have such a difficult time with it. So that's, again, me projecting my personal issues on somebody else. And that's totally unfair and unrealistic.
Well, not necessarily. I just think because of, you know, to be fair, again, let's go back to, you know, the structures that society imposes upon us. We've made it weird to be naked.
Right.
When it's not actually weird to be naked.
Yeah.
You know, it should just be a normal thing, but we've made it this really weird, scary thing.
Yeah, I definitely think that. I mean, I will tell you, I wander around my house naked all the time. I wouldn't...
See, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't like being naked particularly. Like, if I'm at home, I immediately, like, I'm always dressed.
Yeah, I mean, I sleep naked, I wander around the house naked. Uh-huh. I would never run out to grab the mail naked, but...
Right.
You know, I guess...
Yeah, that's interesting.
You keep a pretty active schedule of independent wrestling dates, and I was wondering where people can find you on some upcoming shows.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be back at Maverick Pro on the 24th. I'm going to be back at Hoodslam next month. And... I think that's right. I'm not that active on the independent. I'm getting more active as time goes on.
Well, your Hood Slam appearance, your match with Shotzi Blackheart was incredible, and I can only imagine that they would definitely need you back to bring some closure to that brawl that the two of you had. I mean...
Yes, we will definitely be back in March for sure. Thank you for saying that. I really had fun.
Oh, you guys tore it down. You ladies tore it down. I mean, you actually busted open one of the referees. He was bleeding so heavily. You hit him so hard that his in-ring use of marijuana went from recreational to medicinal in, like, 3 minutes.
In a second. Well, that's an achievement. I like that on my resume.
Yeah, it was... You guys, if you're a listener and you have not checked out Hood Slam, especially if you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, you are really missing out. Now, how can people find you on social media so they can keep up with all of your adventures from Dungeons & Dragons to In the Ring?
Pretty much everything is Katarina's In for Me. So my Twitter and Instagram handle is at Katarina's In for Me. My YouTube channel is youtubechannel.com/Katarina's In for Me. Facebook page is the same. And I have a website that's katarinasinforme.com.
Well, Katarina, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to see you back at Hood Slam. I hope that I'm in town. I think that I'm hoping my schedule does not conflict, but I hope I get to see the payoff for you and Shotzi Blackheart at Hood Slam. And I look forward to continuing to follow your adventures and get to know you better as time progresses.
Well, thank you, and
ditto.
Good to see you soon, too.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Oh, I love it. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Everybody, that was Katarina Waters. You may recall her from her time in WWE as Katie Lee Burchill or her time with Impact Wrestling. As Winter, she is a former Knockouts champion and Knockouts tag team champion, which she held those titles with Angelina Love. You can follow her on all of her social media at Katarina's Infamy, KatarinasInFamy. I am Poyet Almar. You are listening to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyet Almar, and we will be back to close this show right after this. Listeners, that will bring to a close another episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I am Poyo Del Mar, and I want to remind you, please, by all means, follow the podcast on Facebook and Twitter. It allows me the opportunity to get to know our listeners so much better if you are tweeting and or messaging me on social media. You can find the podcast at ADT with PDM. ADT with PDM, Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to follow my personal account, you can follow me at The Glamazon PDM. The Glamazon PDM. That's right, I am Poyo Del Mar, the First Lady of Northern California Professional Wrestling. Again, I would like to remind you, if you want to see me live and in person and you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, come out to El Toro Nightclub when Wrestling for Charity returns on Thursday, March 22nd. We have a star-studded lineup for that show. That's Thursday, March 22nd, and I cannot wait to bring more professional wrestling action here to San Francisco. There's so much happening in the greater Bay Area. I already updated you on all of those shows. It's about the 25-minute mark. If you want to know what's going on in professional wrestling in the Bay Area, go back, check it out again, and I hope to see you live and in person at some of those shows as well. On an upcoming episode, we are going to have many more of your favorite professional wrestling superstars. But until then, in the immortal words of Bobby the Brain Heenan, stick a fork in me, honey, because like this episode, I am done.